We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to Light Years. Samus Fandiari here. Sitting in is the birthday boy, yeah. Aaron Larsoul. I hear you are turning 29. Is that correct?
Yeah, September 12th, tomorrow as we record this, perhaps today as you listen to this, I am in fact turning 29. It might be the extended dance remix of 29, but it is in fact 29.
So we're recording this at 5 p.m. on Sunday. We just watched the Bay Area football team and the former Bay Area football team both lose their openers. So I feel very confident that like 92% of our listeners are pretty annoyed right now. I'm going to say maybe 8% of Light Years listeners are not Niners or Raiders fans. Maybe I'm underselling. Words are kind of a global brand. So I'm not surprised.
They become, I don't know if they always were, but they certainly have become such.
Yeah. So maybe I'm underselling. Maybe it's more like 80% of Light Years listeners are Niners, more Niners than Raiders, but Niners or Raiders fans. But anyway,
are you ready for my hot take though? Since you texted me about, you might be have a take to piss people off. So let me piss people off before
I have I have endless takes. So we'll do a little football talk.
Are we sure? Real quick. Are we sure that Santa Clara / San Jose are the Bay Area?
Relax.
Are we sure?
Yes.
Are we sure? Okay.
Okay. So like it's an interesting topic because if you were to ask me which part of the Bay have I spent the least amount of time in my life, it's the South Bay. East Bay, number one, born.
Yeah. But which part of the Bay is San Jose on?
It hits the southern part of the Bay. It does. It does.
Okay.
I mean, okay.
So I used to have one of my boys, one of my closest friends.
Technically, part of Santa Clara does touch the southern part of the Bay. I understand the technicality you are trying to go for.
But so I used to say, I mean, now the route has been expanded. But back in the day, one of my closest friends, he grew up in Almaden, actually. And
that might actually not touch the Bay.
Or went to Bellarmine High School. And he used to call that, you know, he grew up in the Bay Area. And I'd be like, because Bart doesn't. No, they've expanded the route since then. But if Bart doesn't go there, are we sure it's the Bay? If it doesn't actually touch any water, are we sure it's the Bay?
Well, I think it counts. Also,
all right, fair enough.
We can.
And they're still the San Francisco 49ers. So, yes.
It's true. Also, Santa Clara actually does touch the Bay. So, whatever. That is the least of their problems right now. And usually it's high up on my list of problems. So, God, what a frustrating day. I don't want to dwell too much on it. Yeah. It's just like, do you have any takes?
Yes, I do. I have lots of takes.
Takes you're willing to put on the record.
Those
are two different things.
Yes, I do.
I mean, I might have a Jordan Poole's better than Damian Lillard was at this age take, but I just threw that on the record.
The 49ers offensive line was terrible. They very much missed George Kittle. I am somebody who says on Twitter all the time, this is your daily or weekly reminder that Jimmy G ain't it. And I have been saying this for years. So this is not coming from a Jimmy G stan. Trey Lance was terrible. He was just fucking terrible. And he was so terrible, it almost, not quite, but almost made me go, is it time to see what the backup has?
No.
I despise Jimmy G. I am the one who says over and over and over, Jimmy G ain't it. But, and there are mitigating circumstances. Obviously, George Kittle wasn't there. The Bears are probably terrible, but maybe their defense is okay. Obviously, it was played in a monsoon. All of this is fair.
No.
Elijah Mitchell got hurt. All of that is fair.
I'm giving you none of this.
Trey Lance was awful.
The only take I have on today's Niners game is their defense was way less disciplined than I expected it. I kind of thought their offense would be ugly. I kind of thought they were going to be a work in progress for a few weeks. You know,
that's a nice way to put it.
Some interesting run stuff like Debo. Debo doesn't want to play wide back. Like my favorite story is like, no, Debo wants to get paid before he plays wide back. Correct. That was the story. Correct. So it's like that stuff. I mean, Trey in the first half of the game looked like what I expected. A couple nice passes, a couple like, oh, what are you doing? And a lot of in between. But I expected the defense to be like up there with the best in the league.
And they were for most of the game,
but they were not. They the penalties, just like undisciplined. Yes. I'm just chalking it up. I'm like, let's see what happens. But I mean, it's pretty clear this team needs their defense to be elite so they can figure out where the offense can get to by midseason and make some decisions. Like, yeah, newsflash, you're starting maybe the youngest quarterback in the NFL. Last I checked, he was the youngest starter. Mm. I'm probably forgetting
the point. Are any of the rookies drafted this year starting? I think you might be right.
He was also
him and Trevor Lawrence probably.
He's a lot younger than Trevor Lawrence, because he was exceptionally young when he went out. Like he's
young first class. Yeah.
Yeah. He was the doesn't turn 18 until whatever, like version of NBA prospect, you know,
the frustrating part was it looked to me like Jimmy G. It looked like a Jimmy G team where
only with the running threat, which alone
it's very reliant on the playmakers. He missed that. I think in the first quarter, I don't know who it was. He missed one of the tight ends. He missed, like, he just had a throw that NFL quarterbacks make every single day. He missed for a touchdown. There's a few good plays here and there. There are a bunch of like hold your nose, hold your eyes throws. Like, what did you see there? There was the interception that basically sealed the game.
Yeah.
And it's so reliant on everybody else.
Yeah. But that was,
and reliant on Shanahan, like, scheming it,
but none of that's different than what they had last year. So
correct.
That's like,
but that's a problem.
No, it's not. It's not a problem. And hear me out on why it's not a problem.
Okay.
Unless you're saying they should have acquired a different quarterback than the two names that you're saying, which honestly, maybe that's the end game any season anyway. You know, but since we know that's not in the cards because they drafted a guy third overall and you at least see what he has before you move on, the base game is the same between the two quarterbacks, in my opinion. The only difference is Trey has a ton of upside that could be way better by the end of the season. Whereas Jimmy, I mean, whatever you think of him, he's 30, he'll be 31 at some points. He's kind of what he is. You know what I mean? Like, so
I'm not advocating for Jimmy G to start. Let's be
clear. I know you're not, but my point is there's not a better alternative. So it does focus on everyone else being better until he gets up to speed. I don't care to sugarcoat his performance. I'm just saying
he was bad.
A guy who played 1.5 games last year, no games in college the year before, and 1 AA the year before that, obviously I'm getting to the COVID stuff.
Yeah.
It's obvious this is what it was going to look like. So my standards for it were always going to be like, well, you know, I think Nick Bosa is going to be defensive player of the year. And he played fine today, but he did not play like a defensive player of the year. They need that defense. They need the other players to be essentially what they're paid to be. And then, you know, just let them slowly develop over time. None of that makes this any less frustrating. I'm just like,
it was, and I think the Bears are really bad too, which is a lot of the frustration.
True.
But isn't it interesting? Obviously, this is a Warriors show. Isn't it kind of interesting the comparison to the Steph stuff and Joe Lacob? Like, is it time? Because the 49ers roster is, I think, is a Super Bowl caliber roster. It obviously, is. They were held back by Jimmy.
If you take away the quarterback, they have a top three or four roster.
If you take away the quarterback, I would argue they have a top one roster.
I'm just hedging to be frank.
But the quarterback is the most important.
It's right.
But it's fascinating the comparisons to the Warriors, right? Like, if you believe that they have a Super Bowl caliber roster, obviously the 49ers put a lot of resources into acquiring Trey Lance. I don't like, and they said it again on TV today, that they spent 3 first round picks on it, on getting him. That's wrong. They spent 2 first round picks. They didn't give up 3 first round picks to get him because one of them was the pick that they used for him. Yeah. So they spent 2. But I think it's a fascinating question, right? And Joe Lacob, despite your protests and my protests and most people with a brain's protest, we thought didn't give enough to a roster that could win right now with Steph. It's very interesting. You talked about there isn't a better alternative for the 49ers. Well, maybe they should have gotten a better alternative because this is a roster, in my opinion, that can win.
It's just way too early to go there for me. It's just way too early to go there. Not good, but just way too early. It is interesting because if we were to make that analogy, the equivalent would have been the Niners winning the Super Bowl in spite of spending those picks and not playing him last year. Like that's what the Warriors probably
should have.
They're close. They're very close. Yeah. And it would have been wild for them to do it literally with no one playing quarterback. But anyway, that is your football segment of the day. There's going to be a certain number of listeners who are just like, I don't listen to you guys for football. Leave me alone. And that's fine. I get it.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
So we are, today is September 12th, is your birthday. The Warriors,
my birthday, yes.
The Warriors begin camp on the 24th, 12 days away, sneaking right up on us. So the Warriors, obviously, they go to Japan, they play the Wizards, a couple games in Japan, then they come back and have like a week with no games, then they play a couple preseason games. I believe they're all at home, actually. And then the season starts. But anyway, we're getting right into the flow of it, and I feel like number one news item right now is we still know if Andre Iguodala is back. And I'm going to be honest with you. While I respect him trolling everyone with the tweets saying he's going to announce it on his podcast soon.
Yeah.
I'm a little shocked that I kind of thought he was going to make a decision before now. You know,
did you think or did you hope?
No, I thought. I just thought the team would set a deadline a little earlier because, like, we're going to get into it after talking about Andre a little bit. Like, the back end of their roster is not set, and that's not atypical, but I would figure they'd want a little certainty with who was going to play and who wasn't, just if for no other reason to move on to other options.
So conceptually, I agree with you, but this is like a boyfriend or girlfriend or husband or wife that is trying to get an answer from their significant other without any leverage, right? The Warriors are like very clearly want Iggy back. Very clearly, right? They've been open about they want him back. Kerr's been open about it. Steph has been open about it. They want him back. So for them to put forth a deadline or put forth an ultimatum at some point, I don't know that it makes much sense because it's not like they are clear what their intentions are. Their intentions are we want you back. So they're going to wait for whatever deadline he wants.
I guess the question is, have they lost out on players because of him?
I don't think so. No, I think the Warriors still have
another.
Good...
They still have another open roster spot. So, like, in theory, if there was another player out there that they wanted, they could have acquired him. You know, like,
yes. And it was going to be, and whether he decided to come back or not by now, it was going to be a minimum, and they have the roster spot available. So, I don't think they've missed out on anyone. And frankly, I think the Warriors have had a good offseason, all things considered. So, no, I don't think so. But they were going to, and I think they're still going to let it happen with Iggy on whatever time frame he decides, because
seems like camp's he's earned the deadline. That. Seems he's, like camp is the deadline.
I don't even think camp is the deadline.
I do.
Because here's why. Because I think they're going to keep a 15th roster spot open anyway for him or for somebody else. And to save a little bit on tax for tax purposes as long as they can. So you have to have
fair
you,
point.
You yeah. have to have 14 guys anyway. So I think it is. Even if he doesn't decide by camp, if he wants to be the buyout guy that comes in February, I still think the Warriors will take him.
True.
They're going to have to get, they're going to have to get one more guy at some point. I think they would like that one more guy to be Iggy now, but if he hems and haws and doesn't give his answer on his podcast until later on, whenever that is, I think the Warriors and we'll talk about this. They're going to get bring a bunch of guys in right for workouts.
Yeah. So that right now
the roster spot's going to be there.
Right now, they have 13 guys who are guaranteed for next year. They have Mac McClung on a non-guarantee, so they hit that 14 threshold. But as far as I'm concerned, he counts just as – there's no difference between Mac McClung's non-guarantee and, like, the Exhibit 10 camp invites they have structurally. Like, they could decide McClung is the answer, or they could just as well cut him and, you know
– He's not.
And keep, you know, Elfrid Payton. You know, right. I'm just throwing it inside. So like, it's just kind of a cap thing where he gets to be the guy.
It probably means he gets the first look is what it means.
Well, we'll talk about McClung in a minute, but I want to ask one Andre thing before we move forward. Mm-hmm. How important do you think he's back with the team?
I think it's important. And the reason I think it's important is because the guys that matter, or I think the two leaders of the team slash organization are Steph and Steve Kerr. And both of them, it matters to both of them. And so if it matters to them, I think it matters. And I think there's very much a difference between, you know who I think it matters for most? I think it matters for Jonathan Kuminga the most. Because Andre's not going to play much.
Everyone's been saying that, and but it makes sense. It's like the...
Right. Andre's not going to play much, but... There is a difference when somebody is like on your head about something. If you're a player, it matters, and coaches can do it too. But if you are, even if you don't play very much, if you are in the trenches with the, like Udonis Haslam, you know, with Miami for the last 100 years, something about being a player, that voice is different. So I do think it
particularly
matters.
When it's a Hall of Fame voice, like Andre's. Yep. Andre matters in the league. He
does. And I suspect he's going to be back too, by the way.
I think so too. The other player he could really help is probably Patrick Baldwin, who we haven't really discussed. And to be honest, I still think it's going to be a redshirt year for him because of the physical stuff that held him back. That plus like just being a rookie. Like I love the pick because I thought his upside for number 28 was, Yeah, was way higher than what you normally get there. But part of the reason he fell to that pick was he had an awful first year of college and everyone had injury questions with him. And he's clearly a player you're drafting for 3 years from now. You're not drafting him thinking he's not a Desmond Bane, who actually exceeded my expectations, where it's like, I know I can plug him in for 15 minutes today and he can probably do a little more than that. You know, like he's clearly a player you're picking with idea. His body gets right. We add some muscle onto him, teach him a little thing, you know, like in some ways it reminds me of the Looney pick, right? Like where it was like Looney was a lotto talent, had some physical setbacks, fell. And they're like, there's too much pedigree and too many tools here that like eventually we'll find something. And it's funny that Looney ended up kind of what he did, given what he was in high school. But like, it's still kind of banking on the talent and figuring out a way over time.
Yes, I agree with that. And maybe this is evidence that the Warriors learned their lesson. I mean, Damian Jones, he washed out with the Warriors, but he's been fine since, right? He's had a fine career for what you pick at the end of the first round.
Yeah.
But maybe that was the mistake, right? With Jacob Evans was we want a guy that we can plug in now that he's like NBA ready now, doesn't have a lot of upside, but he's NBA ready now at the end of the first round. We'll get him. And he was like, he's just not an NBA player and wasn't. I think this is a better path for the Warriors. Oh, for anybody at the end of the first round, I think you should be taking home run swings. See if you can get Jordan Poole is a great example.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, Jordan Poole is a good example because he's about to get well over $100 million. I think he's going to get a max.
He should.
I think if he gets to restricted free agency, someone will max him. I do not think he's getting a max from the Warriors a year. Well, early.
Restricted free agency depresses your value artificially though. So, but yes, I think he's worth it.
Does it if you're on a team where everyone knows you have a bazillion dollar tax debt and they think they can wiggle you away, you know?
That's fair. That is fair. The Warriors are in a fairly unique situation. Yeah. It can't be fairly unique. It is unique or it isn't. It is a unique situation. Yes.
That's a good point. It's not one you see every year. That's for sure.
That is a fair point. Yes.
Yeah. So, but like he's a, I think it's interesting because, you could argue that you should be just trying to get like, let's put it this way. There's always a senior or a junior who's picked in the 20s who everyone's like, why did they let him fall? It was just so clear he could play. Like Desmond Bane's a perfect example, right? Draymond Green, in some ways, it was that guy. He went 35th overall. You know, like I can go through, like there's a guy like that every year. And so I feel like a lot of times people in those late picks are always like trying to take those guys, but I don't know.
The problem is there's also the, like they ruined the league when the Warriors bought Chicago's pick and took Jordan Bell. It's like, how did he fall that far and he couldn't play? So I think you,
or is just upside. Like, he's just a guy you find in the G League basically. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that late in the first round or in the second round, I think it makes sense to take upside swings, which the Warriors have done this year. I think it is the right path forward.
Yeah. Okay. So let's. I agree with you. I think I think when you have as much youth as the Warriors have on your roster, and like Kuminga is the obvious one because he plays the same position as Andre, but Moses Moody, mature as he is still 19, 20. There is just veteran wisdom that will help him. James Wiseman, different position, young as hell. Patrick Baldwin, Ryan Rollins, like that's five guys on their roster on their rookie contracts. And Steph Clay and Draymond aren't holding their hands, not at the level that someone like Andre, who's not being counted on to play 36 minutes a night, is, you know? So right. there's value in him as just kind of doubling down on your assets in some ways.
Yes, and plus, even if Steph or Clay's not doing it, but even if Steph or Draymond or Steve Kerr or the coaching staff were doing that, there's value in having multiple voices.
Sure.
And having varied experience. And Andre is one of the most cerebral guys. Basketball IQ, he's among the best ever.
Yeah.
And so being able to impart that, it just is different than what you can do if you
aren't in
the trenches with them.
He both has more time just by virtue of being on the bench with them.
Yes.
And
it also carries with it a different credibility if you're still on the team.
Yeah, Steph Curry tells you something, it's like, that's great, but I'm probably never going to be you. Like, actually, none of you are going to be him, just to be clear.
Nobody in the history of planet Earth before forward.
You know, he's a global superstar. There's a difference between that and just like a guy who's been a really good NBA player. What do you think of when you think of Iguodala? Because I just think winner. Winner is like the number one.
Yeah.
Like super, like Steph, I think, changed the game.
Yes.
Klay, I think, top three shooter of all time, and maybe number two, to be honest. With Andre, while he's like kind of always been slept on in terms of how individually good he is, like I just think of him as a guy who just does all, like every team he's been on wins. Every team he's been on, he does something to make them better. And that is just, you know, particularly for younger players, like if Andre can get younger players to buy into doing the things he does, the Warriors are a juggernaut for eternity. Because usually younger players think the only thing that matters is showing that I can score 25 points.
So to answer your question, what's the first thing I think of when I think of Iguodala is I think he may have the most fascinating Hall of Fame discussion case in history.
By the way, shout out Tim Hardaway, Hall of Fame. The UTEP two-step. There we go.
I think Iggy's a Hall of Famer, but I think it is one of the most fascinating discussions ever because the raw numbers are not there. The accolades. I mean, I think he's a one-time All-Star, I believe.
I think it's two or three.
I'm looking. Hold on, let me look. Yeah, he's a one-time All-Star.
You talk. I'll get you this.
He's a one-time All-Star.
Damn it.
But he. And I don't even know how, like, I don't think there's a lot of all defensive teams, even though at times he's been one of the best defensive players in the league. And he was part of the revolution that ushered in the era where the most important thing was being a big wing and who could stop those big wings.
Positional versatility.
And he's one of the best at it. And as I mentioned earlier, his basketball IQ, and he's a four-time champ and he has a finals MVP.
And he's very important. Like, you cannot tell the Warriors story
without
Iguodala. Like, yeah, like, no offense, but like, I might leave Barbosa out of it, even though Barbosa was like a valuable piece for the Warriors for a while. But
what
like,
about Zaza?
Zaza's my guy. But yeah, like, Andre's like a core piece. There's a difference.
I mean, yeah, he's won four titles with those boys. There's only
one.
And
he was in the closing lineup in all four of them. So,
I mean,
that's all you got to know.
The facts are he was on the floor as the fourth title was secured.
Yeah.
So what I think of him is I think he's a Hall of Famer, but I understand how fascinating the discussion is around that. And will he be a Hall of Famer? I don't know. I think he should be. But if you go by, you know, the Basketball Reference,
yeah, he's
predictor. That's troubling.
We're not having this. He's making it.
I think he is. But that is the first thing I
run.
Think of.
Run TMC is in the Hall of Fame. He's making it. I'm sorry.
He should. He should. But all those dudes from Run TMC have raw numbers better than his. But I absolutely agree with you. He should make it. But I think he is, or would be, incredibly valuable. And I think he was incredibly valuable to the team last year. I think his body doesn't have it anymore. What was funny is at the beginning of last season, when he was actually playing, he was good, but he was available in a third of the playoff games last year. And I don't think that that's a trend that's going to go in the opposite direction where he will be more available.
Shout out Andre telling everyone the NBA is his side hustle right now.
Yeah,
that made me laugh because it's like, that's one of those jokes where it's like, I'm kidding, but I'm serious. You know, like,
you know why I think he'll be back? I mean, I think he cares about, you know, he's big on securing, which I think he feels like he has Steph's legacy and all that. But I think he will be back probably because of his podcast, right? Because I think he cares about his podcast. And even if the NBA is his side hustle, even as it relates to his podcast, his podcast is far more influential and far more meaningful if he is still on a roster. Even if he doesn't play,
yeah,
the fact that he is on an NBA roster still matters.
All right, let's talk about, we did get one news item last week, and we hit on this a little bit. We got some names who the Warriors are bringing in for the camp.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to start with this. These players are on the roster short of a trade. Like, they're all guaranteed. Steph, Clay, Wiggins, Draymond, Looney, Poole, Dante DiVincenzo, Jamichael Green, Jonathan Kuminga, Moses Moody, James Wiseman, Patrick Baldwin, Ryan Rollins. That's 13 full contract NBA players.
Yes.
And then Mac McClung is currently on a non-guarantee. So as far as I'm concerned, he's on the same deal as like Kenneth, the camp invites, who are Elfrid Payton, Ben McLemore, forgot Pat Spencer on my list, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, and Kenneth Faried. And before we get into it, I should have thrown this out there also. Quindary Weatherspoon's on a two-way, and he's going to probably be stuck on a two-way because the only way he can get out of being on a two-way is if another team gives him a full contract.
Correct.
Which...
Or if he was traded.
Yeah.
Which he won't be.
Yeah. So even if I think he should be on a full contract, the Warriors kind of have him in under team control, for better or worse. Yes. And then Lester Quinones, who they gave a two-way to very early. Because he's Wiseman's college roommate. Anyway, I'll keep that there. But anyway, so what we're talking about is
tennis shorts are released short.
Yeah. Potentially two roster spots, more than likely one, because Andre will probably command one of those roster spots. And maybe a two-way spot, because they can always cut one of these guys from a two-way. Like, there's not a there's not a huge financial penalty for cutting a two-way guy. So, So there's some interesting names here. I guess I want to start with this. Of the names, and I'll include McClung in this list, who are you most intrigued by making the roster? And who do you think, who are you most intrigued by?
Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. You've definitely talked about it on the show, but I think you and I have talked about it on your show before also, about the concept of the second draft,
right?
Of guys that, and Elfrid Payton fits into this too.
Sure.
About guys that, you know, have high pedigree. And by the way, this is also could be an argument for why the Warriors were interested in Mac McClung. Guys that have had a pedigree, whether it's high school, and we can go back to Nico Mannion,
mm-hmm.
right? Guys that have had this high school pedigree or college pedigree, and maybe have washed out other places, the Warriors seem to be very interested in that. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson at Arizona, obviously, was a big recruit and was a lottery pick. So, and Elfrid Payton was too. But the difference between the two is I don't think you can have enough people that can guard wings. And this ties into the Iguodala discussion. You can't have too many guys that can guard those apex predator wings, LeBron and Kawhi and Paul George, those kind of guys. And can Rondae Hollis-Jefferson do that? Maybe, maybe not. But at least with the physical profile and with the background, he can. So he would be the guy I would give the first shot to, is my point.
He reminds me in some ways of GP2. And that's going to be a popular narrative. Like, who's going to be the new GP2? The odds are... no one will, because
no one.
Because
no
it's one. Just it's really rare for a guy to go from fighting for the 15th man to being playing 20 minutes in the NBA Finals and deserving them.
Yes.
It just everything clicked with GP2, and he was kind of like the perfect elixir around the core to provide the right spark and do certain things that they needed. But with Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, I will say this: there's some similarity there in the sense of, clearly his NBA skill set is defense. He can't shoot the ball. Mm-hmm. Offensively, he's kind of a garbage man. Like, he's mm-hmm. a really good cutter. He'll randomly run into 10 points moving off ball in a way that GP would, you know. But like, he's not running a pick and roll. He's not coming off of a screen. You're not posting him up. Like, he doesn't really do anything on offense other than like exploit spacing with athleticism, right?
Yes. Yes. But again, like, I don't think in this NBA, I don't think you can have enough guys that can credibly, that you can throw on
yeah.
lead ball handlers, especially if they're bigger, right? But
my point is, his issue isn't defense.
No.
Because he's been an NBA quality defender his yes. whole life. Since he got to NBA. Sorry.
You're looking at his baby pictures.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying. Yeah. The reason he doesn't hang in the league is because everyone's like, I don't have a role for him on offense.
No, because I don't know what to do with you offensively. Correct.
Yeah. And I wonder
I think Elfrid Payton is interesting too, though, because I mean, the obvious answer is Jordan Poole, but who is the backup point guard?
Mac McClung. No, but what I was saying is I could see Rondé having success in some of the Warriors lineups because they're so unique and they can use a wing who's essentially a dunker spot rim runner on offense, which he can do.
Yeah, I mean, that is the Gary Payton role, right? Mm-hmm. And GP2 ended up making more threes, more corner threes than anybody had reason to believe he was going to, but that was essentially the role. Yes.
Yeah.
So I would give, for me, Rondé Hollis Jefferson gets the first crack at it.
Elfrid, you're right, because part of the reason they gave Mac the non-guarantee and part of the reason they're inviting Elfrid is, love him or hate him, and I know most people were not in love with him last year, like Chioza did fill a role as like the third ball handler, the guy mm-hmm. who could play backup minutes when Steph mm-hmm. sat, that sort of stuff.
But that's right? The thing, like nobody should expect, and I think it's a fine answer to say that to think that the backup port guard is going to be Jordan Poole.
I'm talking about third string because
yeah.
Let's just be realistic. If Steph's probably going to miss 15 games.
That's the point. Correct.
In those 15 games, Jordan Poole is not going to play 48 minutes. So, correct. So you need someone who's playing 15 minutes per game, 15 games a year. And maybe a little more. You just never know how things will break. You don't know if Poole's going to miss a week with like a sore hammy and you need someone to buy some minutes behind Steph, you know? So just a third string point guard right now without him, the third string point guard would be Draymond or Iguodala if he comes back. And I just think that they probably,
well, I mean,
or Ryan Rollins. Sorry.
I was going to say, I like Rollins, but I don't know that you want to, for a team that has championship aspirations, I don't know that you want to leave that to a rookie. Especially a rookie that didn't play in summer league and we haven't seen yet and don't know how healthy he is and all of those things.
Right.
I would like to have another option.
In theory, Rollins going to get that first shot at it, but it's like, it just comes down to like, even if this is a player who will never play in the playoffs for you, it's like the need, it's like the need to have an extra pitcher if you're a baseball team. Yeah, exactly. So it's like, Elfrid's been an NBA player, you know, never lived up to the 10th pick overall hype that he got, you know, like he just hasn't, you know.
But I do like, again, to the Warriors' credit, I do think that I think the pedigree and second draft concept is something that is valuable. So yeah. I think those are good options to consider.
What about someone like Kenneth Faried? Kenneth Faried on the Warriors would literally be a we don't trust Wiseman, and we just need another big at the end of the bench.
So my issue with Faried, and one day I'll tell you the Portland Kenneth Faried draft story off the air. But I don't think that he is the right choice, and because his value is we just need another big, but he's 6'9". He's an energy 6'9" guy that plays big. I think if the Warriors
those are guys who play the Warriors style.
I know, but it's a big body. The Warriors.
I'd rather have a 6'8" Kenneth Faried than a 7-foot stiff. If we're talking about a pure innings eater, you know what I mean?
Sure, but are you certain Kenneth Faried's not a stiff anymore? Like,
I mean, he could be.
When was the last time you saw Kenneth Faried?
I did not watch CSKA Moscow much this year. So your point stands, but like my point is I don't need that end of the – I don't need a big, stiff 7-footer.
No, I agree with you, but if you are worried about we're not – like we don't trust Wiseman or we don't trust Wiseman's health, like Kenneth Reed's not playing over Kevon Looney. So if there is something that is missing, I think it is a bigger body. And I don't think Fareed fits that.
Okay. What about someone like Ben McLemore? Complete different type of
player. Yeah, I mean,
I'm running down the list.
No, yeah. Ben McLemore is like, you can never have enough shooting. Ben McLemore is a capable NBA shooter, and
I'm a little surprised he took a Warriors camp invite just because I can understand how Elfrid Payton sees the potential to get that like third string point guard role. I don't know where McLemore is seeing the potential to.
I mean, you have
Moses Moody, Dante DiVincenzo, and then obviously Clay and Wiggins. Yeah. Like he's redundant among those guys.
So correct. My suspicion though here is that there is a Warriors effect. There's a little extra shine that comes with being on the Warriors, the winning, all of that. So my supposition is he wants a little Warriors halo effect. That what the Warriors bring you into camp, or you get some minutes, you get some buckets. There's that Warriors effect because you're right. He is log jammed behind a lot of dudes that are going to play ahead of him.
Right.
So unless he thinks a bunch of those guys are not going to play or going to be hurt, then.
Or he's heard some weird rumor that like Clay or Poole are getting traded, you know?
Easy. Yeah. So I suspect what it is, If you do get minutes on the Warriors, you know you're going to get open shots, right? Obviously, playing with Steph, Clay, Poole, whatever, you're going to get.
He does fit their system.
You're going to get open looks.
It will do wonders for him.
Yes. Combine that with the like Warriors halo glow championship sparkle, whatever. I think those are the reasons. But you are completely correct. There are 4, 5, 6 guys that would play ahead of him, so he's not going to get any minutes.
Yeah, rug deal for him. All right, so you know,
you answered your own question because if he had better options, he would take them.
That's true too. All right, so gun to your head here. Final two roster spots. What are we looking at on opening night?
Rondé Hollis-Jefferson and Iggy, if he wants to, and if not, they'll leave it open for Iggy if he decides to.
So you don't think they're going to have another ball handler in there?
I don't think so. No.
I'm
not saying that's correct. I'm saying that's what my guess is.
It seems to me. Yeah. I just think McClung has a decent shot at getting on this roster. Even if it's as a two-way guy, he shot the ball really well in summer league. The Warriors will, They'll take the ball out of his hands if he plays with them a little bit. Which
how?
Yeah, well, have you seen Steve Kerr?
Have you seen Matt McClung? He is not one that is willing to play without the ball in his hands. He gonna get the ball and he gonna get him up.
He does get the shots up. There's no way around.
He gonna get him up.
There's no way around that. I think. When you're talking about like potential like deep bench guards who fill that specific role for them, I still think it's hard for them to do worse than him. My whole thing is he should be on a two-way. Like he's a fine little two-way project, you know? The way Chiosa was, and obviously it didn't work out with Chiosa.
Did not. Nico.
And I don't see the two-way spot for him unless they cut Quiñones. So I don't know, but I just don't think it's smoke being blown that they invited him to camp and they gave him the contract, you know?
Correct.
They're paying him through the summer.
Brought him in from the Lakers, summer league team, right? Everybody's a free agent in summer league and he literally switched teams in summer league. Right. So there's obviously something there that the Warriors like, find value in. It would not be my suggestion, but.
Well, you can see like he fits what they want lead guards to do. The question is, will he do it? And does he do it at a high enough level?
Wait, do you think so? Actually? because I think Steve, my guess is, I don't know this. My guess is he drives Steve Kerr nuts. Because Steve Kerr,
I think all summer league basketball drives Steve Kerr nuts. So I don't think any part of summer league basketball is appealing to Steve Kerr.
That's fair. But Mac just plays in a way that is highlighted in summer league, right? Like he lets Mac do what he thinks he does anyway and cook. My guess is Mac is not Steve Kerr's favorite. So my guess is Steve would like somebody a little bit more steady, shall we say, as a backup.
Yeah,
backup,
but I think they've tried the steady thing, and steady doesn't do anything for you in the NBA if they shoot 34% from the field, which is Chioza, Wanamaker, all those guys. I mean, those are all,
by the way, one of these days,
those are all better ball handlers. And like
one of these days, I'm letting the Wanamaker, the lost tapes, the lost files of me and you texting about Wanamaker. I'm letting those loose on the timeline one of these days.
I thought the 3-point shooting was going to come around, man. I really did. and it did not. So part of I'll be honest with you, actually the only reason I'm intrigued by McClung in that role is he can hit shots. And I'm really tired of seeing them carry a guard at the end of the bench who can't hit shots, particularly since the ball just sits in Draymond's hands and the other players' hands anyway.
That is, yes. To be a...
Now you are correct. If he decides to just hijack the offense and be like, it's the Mac McClung show, like that ain't going to work. Not if it's like Clay, you know, Poole, Wiggins. It doesn't matter. He will be the worst player on the team no matter what. So like, he can't do that.
He will be the worst player on the floor whenever he's on the floor. So the Mac McClung show and the forays to the rim and all of the up and unders and let me get in my bag is not going to work. That is not it.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. It'll be interesting. I mean, it's like, it'll be interesting to see how the whole roster comes out. But
I suspect it's Rondae Hollis-Jefferson and leaving a spot open for Iggy.